I'd like to talk to you about living for God in times that we don't really feel like it, and the times when we really can't be bothered. Unless you're one of those Christians here tonight who is 100% perfect, then we all have times when we struggle to feel motivated. And that's what I want us to think about tonight. So when you're old enough to get embarrassed that you're still named after a cheesy biscuit, then you realise you're probably just getting old. And the problem with getting old is harder to keep in touch with stuff. Technology, language, what young people are going on about. You have to work proper hard to stay in touch with what's going on. So I had one of these getting older moments a while ago where I came across a word that everyone younger than me was using and I didn't have a clue what it meant. I kept on seeing it on the internet, seeing it written down, and I was like, I think I know what this means, but I'm not really sure. You know that thing where you don't really dare say or type something for the first time in case you say it a little bit wrong? I just knew if I was in a conversation full of people and I used this word, the whole room would just stop, go quiet. Everybody look at me and go, what are you going on about? And so here's the word. Meh. 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 Is it a word or is it a noise? Meh. Indifferent, not fussed either way. Take it or leave it, whatever, can't be bothered. I think it's a brilliant word because I think that probably every single one of us here will experience that feeling tonight. You might have even experienced it today. We've probably all known times when we feel like this about something or just about life in general. I think if we're all honest, we've probably all had times when we felt this about our faith. Even if we don't think it, we probably feel it. We all know that there's absolutely nothing about God that is remotely meh. He's the most anti-meh thing ever. And that's what makes it even worse feeling it. Just from time to time we feel it. It doesn't really happen at nights when you're at the point. It starts to subtly creep in when you find praying hard. You get lost knowing where to start and you give up. It happens when reading the Bible can feel a little bit dry and you don't really know what to do. Even in the middle of everyone worshipping here tonight, I imagine there was a few people that probably felt a bit meh and probably stood there feeling guilty as you compared yourself to everyone around you. Tonight, if you're a Christian, there is nothing more that will rob you of everything that God has for you in your life than giving in the times when you feel like that. If I was going to get ultra serious on you tonight, I would probably say that the enemy, devil, big bad dark side, whatever you want to call him, would do nothing more than to get you feeling meh and stop you from acting on it. Fewer things in life will kill your passion for God more. There was an old guy who lived a long time ago who said something about this. He was called C.S. Lewis, even though he died a long time before the word ever came out. And he said this. He said, if Christianity is false, then it's not important. If Christianity is true, then it is infinitely important. It's the most important thing ever. But one thing Christianity can never be is a bit important. If he was here tonight, he would probably say it like this. If Christianity is false, we might as well go home. If it is true, it's the most important thing ever. But one thing it can never be is meh. It's just not like that. I imagine when Adam and Eve first stood on earth, they didn't look around and go, meh. When Jesus' disciples followed him around for 3 years, they probably didn't look at each other and go, well, I suppose this is okay. So why do we sometimes find it so hard to be motivated? And what can we do about it? Tonight I want us to think about 7 words from the Bible that might help in times like these. 7 words in the Bible that I think will help us when we feel like this. And these 7 words were said about a guy in the Old Testament called David. You might remember David, the guy who fought Goliath, totally messed up big time, loved God, broke half the 10 commandments, tried again, failed miserably. At the end of his life, these were the 7 words used to describe David. It said this, David served God's purposes in his generation. David served God's purposes in his generation. Looking back at the end of my life, I'm not sure there are 7 words I would want more to describe how I live my life. 7 words that I would want God to think of me more that I would want written on my gravestone than Ched served God's purposes in his generation. Would you want that said about you? I'd quite like Ched's was a good dad. I'd like even more Ched's played football for Sheffield Wednesday. But nothing would top this. Ched served God's purposes in his generation. I have no idea whether God will think that at the end. When we fill our lives with serving God's purposes, finding something we care about and living for him, I am convinced there's not much time, energy, or emotion left to feel meh. When we discover who God has made us to be and why he put each one of us in this room on earth, I believe the meh fades away into insignificance as we become overwhelmed at how amazing God is. What has God put on your heart that you care about? What bothers you? What gets under your skin? Because that God-given passion to serve God's purposes melts the meh away and is given it to each one of us, whether we've discovered it yet or not. You might think that's all right for you. You're old. You can serve God's purposes. What do I do if I'm only 12, 14, 16? What are God's purposes in my life today? To help us answer that, I'd like us to watch my favourite advert on television. I have absolutely no idea why I love this advert so much, but from the moment I saw this advert the first time, I absolutely loved it. So we're going to watch it now. Apart from the crazy purple thing, I've got no idea what it is, the thing that I love most about this advert is the words at the end. Currently there are billboards all around town in Peterborough, probably all over England, that in giant letters say this: when stuff sucks, make it right. When stuff sucks, make it right. Unfortunately, there's a lot of stuff that sucks in our lives, in the lives of people around us, and in the wider world. The world around us does not reflect the world that God made. People's lives aren't how God intended them to be. When it said David served God's purposes in his generation, I don't think it was a million miles from saying, when stuff sucked, David put things right. Because he lived to serve God and not himself. He messed it up many, many times, but he lived with a passion to serve God's purposes. We only have to look around us to see how we can serve God's purposes. The world around us is unfair and messed up. Today, about 20,000 people, mostly children, died simply because they didn't have enough food to eat. And I think that sucks. Last night in Peterborough and all over England, homeless people will have slept rough because they didn't have somewhere to live, or they got themselves in a mess they couldn't get out of. And I don't think that's right. Last week at school, people in our class or year will have been bullied, abused, ripped to shreds because they look, act, or sound different to what other people think they should be like. And I think that sucks. There will have been people so lonely that they wandered around school on their own because they don't know how to fit in, and they probably went home and bawled their eyes out. And I don't think God made people to experience that. It's people that we know and love and care about who don't know Jesus and face an eternity without him. And I think that sucks more than anything else. People this week will live in heartache because they've been treated in a way they shouldn't have been by someone they should have been able to trust. And I don't think that's right. In some countries of the world, 11, 12, 13-year-old girls would have been forced to marry 60, 70-year-old men because their family had to effectively sell them for food to eat to survive. The world does not look how God intended it to look. There is a desperately hurting world that God would have us help a part in playing, because God infinitely cares for every individual in this world who is made in his image. For every single issue that I've mentioned, there is something that can be done. Like David, we can serve God's purposes, and when stuff sucks, we can do something to make it right. There's a verse in the Bible that talks about this very thing. And I think this is one of the toughest verses in the Bible. I don't know, Matt, if you can put it on the screen. It's in Matthew 5, chapter 46, verse 46, and it says this. It says, if you love only those that love you, why should you get a reward for that? Even the tax collectors do that. And if you're nice only to your friends, you are no better than anyone else. Even the people who don't know God are nice to their friends. And I think there's a massive challenge there for us to love people who probably aren't going to love us back. To help hungry people on the other side of the world who will probably never know our name. To love a kid at school that we won't look that amazing by hanging around with. One of the biggest questions I have to ask myself at the moment is this. Do I just love and live for the people who love me? Or do I also love and live for the people who God has called me to love and live for? I think my mum had a good understanding of this whole thing, of living for other people and not ourselves. And I'd like to tell you about something she asked me to do when I was younger that I managed to spectacularly fail at. At school, a kid joined our class midway through year seven, and he was called Stephen. I'd like to say that Stephen was a nice guy, but in truth, I found him a bit annoying. Actually, most people found him annoying. You probably have people in your class at school that everyone finds annoying. I didn't have a huge amount of friends at school. I was a bit of a loner, and even I found Stephen hard work. It sounds quite harsh to stand here and say he's annoying, but actually it was true. I guess he didn't know how to make friends very easily. So what he did was he got on people's nerves so they would give him attention and hopefully they would like him. I found out later that Stephen's life at home was as bad as it was at school. So Stephen was the butt of everyone's jokes at school, and they didn't particularly say nice stuff to him or treat him nicely. He was bullied by many people in my class, physically and verbally. And at this point in my life, my mum suggested that I made friends with Stephen and invite him round to our house after school. This was the last thing that I wanted to do. Over time, we sort of became friends, a bit begrudgingly from my part, because being friends with Stephen was not going to make me popular at school. He started coming round our house after school, and he started coming to church with us, and he even came on family holidays with us, which I remember well because I went loopy at my parents for asking him to come on holiday with us. An example of what Stephen was like was one day at school, and this was without a doubt the most cringe-worthy moment of my entire school life. Stephen announced to the whole class, Chris has become my friend, and I go to church with him, and I've become a Christian. If you become friends with Chris, you can go to church too, and he's going to turn you into a Christian. This kid said straight away, I don't want you to turn me into a Christian. The whole class just groaned at me as if I was going to make them into Christians. The long and the short of it is that we were friends-ish for a few years. He did become a Christian, but we drifted away when I left school and I heard he drifted from his faith. Without a doubt, I handled the whole thing badly. I wasn't a great friend. I often did the friend stuff through gritted teeth. I messed it up and had a bad attitude about the whole thing. I think the reality is that living these verses can be tougher than they sound. To love those who may not love us back, to serve God's purposes in a generation of people who don't really care about God, can be really, really tough. But I think that's part of what C.S. Lewis was saying. Christianity is either not important, important enough to give everything for, but somewhere in the middle doesn't really fit. It can't just affect a bit of our lives. A couple of weeks ago, I took my short daily cycle ride to work. And if I'm honest, I felt a little bit bored of cycling to work every day. So I had this radical idea to change things up a bit to make it less boring. And I decided to cycle a different direction to work, because that's how amazing and exciting my life is. So mid-journey, I turned round and I started to cycle a different direction. And after a few minutes of cycling, I heard a voice behind me going, Cheds, Cheds. And I turned round and it was another cyclist. And he was saying, Cheds, Cheds, do you remember me? And it was Stephen. I've not even bumped into him for the last 15 years. I didn't even know that he still lived in Peterborough. And I started some small talk with him, but he just started talking to me rapidly and quickly, as if he had something to say. And he said this to me. He said, "Chad, I think about you and your family all the time. I'm not exaggerating, I think about you loads. I know your family are Christians, and I know what you did for me. Your family was like my family. Your home was like my home. You'll never know how much you meant to me and how much I appreciate the effect you had on my life." And within a few minutes, he was gone. Whilst I know inside, and God knows how much of a hash I made of the whole friendship, I guess somewhere down the line, God knew what he was doing, and he did the bits that I couldn't do. If you love those who love you, what reward is there for that? If you're nice only to your friends, you know better than anyone else. Even the people who don't know God are nice to their friends. The stuff that people around us face sucks. There's something about giving our lives to God that requires us to give everything, because it can never be a bit important. It can be easy to pour our endless prayers into what job we're going to do when we're older, what university we're going to go to, who we're going to marry, when perhaps the harder prayers are saying, "God, who is it that you call me to be friends with? Who can I love that might never know my name or love me back? How can I serve the world's last and lost and least?" I want to ask you tonight if this is something that you want to give your life for. Like David, to serve in God's purposes in your generation, whatever that looks like for you. I heard an amazing quote a while ago that said this. It said, "Don't ask yourself what the world needs. Ask yourself what makes you come alive, and then go and do that, because the world needs people who have come alive. Because being meh is not coming alive. It's the opposite of it." It's a scary prayer to pray, but would you dare to pray that God would break our hearts for the things that break his heart, and that we would never be the same again? When we see stuff that sucks, could we pray that God would show us how to make things right? Does poverty, homelessness, bullying, child marriages affect us? Does it hurt us that people we know don't know Jesus and we want them to know him? These are things that we can do something about. These are things that make the mess fade away as we give our lives to serving Jesus. I want to finish tonight by giving the best and most recent example I can of this. And the kind of example, I'm glad that the person that I'm going to talk about isn't here tonight. And that's Lizzie Steele. Put your hand up if you know Lizzie Steele. Good. If you've seen Lizzie recently, you'll know she looks radically different to how she looked a few months ago. And that's because she heard about a charity that works with children who have cancer and other illnesses and makes wigs for them. I guess to feel normal after losing their hair after chemotherapy. So Lizzie cut her hair off and sent it away to the charity to make a wig for a child who has cancer. I doubt Lizzie will ever know or meet the person who has her hair, but I'm sure it will make their life better. I admire the way that Lizzie got up and did something about a situation that she thought sucked. David served God's purposes in his generation. Will you? If Christianity is false, it's not important. If it's true, it is the most important thing ever. But one thing it can never be is meh. A bit important. I want us to finish tonight by responding to what we've heard. And I've got a challenge for us. It's not the hardest challenge in the world. I'm not going to ask you to cut your hair off. All I'd like you to do is to have the most honest 3 minutes of your life ever with God. And I'd like to give you something to help you do that. I'd like to ask whether you want to give your life to serving God's purposes. Whether you want to give your life to following God's call to serving people in need. Whether you would be open to listening to what God wants you to do. And I guess there's two answers to that. One is yes, and one is no. And I think they're both equally valid, because God just wants us to be honest. And some people here might actually say, no, I don't really want to live for God. I want to live for me. There's no point lying to God. You might want to say, part of me wants to do this, but if I'm honest, I'm too bothered what other people think of me, and I can't do it. You might say, this is not how I feel at the moment, but I want to feel different, but it's not how I feel. Or you might want to say, yes, this is what I want to give my life for. I want to hear my name serve God's purposes in his generation at the end of my life. I want you to ask God to show you or put a thought in your mind about who he wants you to help, who he wants you to live for, to give God permission to break your heart for the lonely, the lost, and the least.